Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm Diane Stemple, and this week I'll be discussing the very newly released book, The New Cocktail Hour, The Essential Guide to Handcrafted Drinks. Welcome to Andre Darlington and Tania Darlington, a brother-sister team. Hi.
Hi, Diane. You're breaking up a little bit, but
oh, okay.
I'm still here.
Okay. Andre, are you there?
I'm there.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're having a bit of technical difficulty today because about half an hour ago at my house and like a mile away, the phone died. And then when I got here, it turns out their phone's dead. So we're doing this.
Oh, no.
We're doing this on my cell phone with both of you going through my cell phone to the engineer board and then through to me.
Okay.
So a little exciting, a little last minute excitement at the end. nothing a drink wouldn't solve. Anyway, so this book came to my attention because, Tania, you've already published a cheese book called The Bruno Brothers House of Cheese in 2013. How did you two get the idea for this book?
Well, actually, Diane, we really wanted to do a book together, and we pitched a book about cheese, wine, beer, and spirits. But our publisher really wanted a cocktail guide. And so that sent us down this rabbit hole, and Andre's specialization really is writing about wine and spirits, and so it was a project we couldn't refuse.
Oh, I can see why. So you went to the publisher wanting to combine everything, and then they sent you in this direction.
Exactly.
Yeah,
go ahead, Andre.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, Ty and I are cocktail enthusiasts, so we were, you know, Google hanging together anyway as we were working on other projects, and we would make drinks together online.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
As funny as that sounds.
It does sound funny.
This was a good fit for us.
Okay. So how often do you see each other in person and have cocktails together?
A few times a year, probably more than before we wrote the book, that's for sure.
Okay.
But probably, you know, six to eight times a year we're traveling together, or Tania comes to Madison where I live, or mm-hmm. I fly to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I want to say Tania lives in Philly and Andre lives in Madison, two very food-centric locations.
yes.
May I ask who's older and what the age difference is? You don't have to give specifics.
I'm older and we're six and a half years apart.
Oh, okay. So who introduced whom to alcoholic cocktails?
Well, Diane, we can never tell.
Oh, are your parents listening?
Probably. I definitely got a head start.
Oh, well, I would. I didn't know it was 6 years. That's a significant head start.
Definitely. Diane, you should know that we had parents who were very European, and we were allowed to drink with adults at the dinner table from a very young age.
Well, that was my next question. Do your parents have a part in this, and what are their favorite cocktails?
My
mother does like a rum or bourbon sometimes, so I picked her Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, our father, enjoyed gin, especially gin-soaked raisins.
Okay.
He thought it was a cure for arthritis. Oh. We always had those lazy Susan.
Okay. So, because I was wondering, like, are the parents delighted, worried, a little bit of both?
I think they're delighted.
Oh, good, yeah. good. So the publisher was the same as your cheese book, Tanaya, right?
That's right. It's a division of Perseus Books called Running Press, and they have offices here in Philadelphia.
Okay. So had you gone to them with a new idea, and then they said, no, let's just do cocktails?
Exactly. And I had really loved working with them on the De Bruyne Brothers House of Cheese. I loved the photographer, who's also local. So one thing we were really excited about was, you know, we got to work with Running Press again, and we got to work with Jason Varney, who's a terrific food photographer. So it was good karma.
Okay, great. And the book is beautiful, and the cocktails mouth-watering. I mean, it's difficult to decide what to drink first reading the book.
That's a good problem to have, Diane.
It was. Now, how did you divide up the writing?
We did it fairly evenly, and we sort of knew which sections were which, and, you know, some of the different sections appealed to one or the other of us,
mm-hmm.
and we tried to keep it as even as possible, and what's been fantastic is one of us would sort of burn out on a section, the other one of us would say, okay, I'll do it, I'll pick it up.
Would pick it up and check it out.
Yeah, and it got to the point in the book where we couldn't remember who had written what, which is, I think, fantastic, and leads to a singular voice in the book.
Yes. I didn't know what you were going to say. Just to tell the listeners who haven't read it yet, because it just came out like a few weeks ago, the drink descriptions are formulated in a certain way. First, they have three or four word tasting notes. Then an intro comment, which often includes a pairing with food suggestion. Like one example that I got a kick out of was that Cure Royale is recommended to be drunk with a red velvet cupcake. Which is a more humorous one, and then a lengthy and often historical description of where the cocktail came from, and then the recipe.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe one of you did the food suggestions and one of you did the history, but now you're saying you both did everything.
Pretty much. Andre started out by building this giant Google Doc where he began putting cocktails in historical order, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we started out with about 500 drinks on our list. We really wanted to teach ourselves the cocktail canon and to mm-hmm. Develop a book that made it really approachable for people who were, you know, enjoy craft cocktails and wanted to try making them at home.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, we started making these Google Hangout dates. It's kind of like Skype, and probably every other day or so, we would hop online with shakers in hand, and mm-hmm. we'd have three or four drinks queued up, and we'd make several versions of it because many of these cocktails had been adjusted over time, or there are multiple recipes out there. So we would make a few variations for each one, try it, talk about it, and that was really fun because we got to hang out like old times again.
Yeah. Now, what time of day did you do this, though? Did you do it at the cocktail hour?
But of course, Ryan, it is called the new happy hour.
You couldn't do this at 10 in the morning, or the day would be shot.
You got
that's
that.
Right. I think for the layout, We had looked through a lot of cocktail books. You know, by the end of the book, we had looked through almost every other cocktail book.
Uh-huh.
And so often there's, fairly obscure ingredients, and you don't know whether you're going to like the drink. So we really wanted to put in tasting notes, as if it was wine or a beer or something on a menu so that people would know whether they wanted to make it before they went out and purchased the ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah. And that helped me a lot. I mean, this is probably the first cocktail book I've had on the show, and I don't read that many cocktail books. So.
Oh, well, thanks. We're honored.
So it was, I didn't know how it compared to other ones, but it seemed quite accessible.
Most cocktail books are organized alphabetically or by base spirit. Mm. And we wanted to create something where there was really a story that would unfold so that you could start with the first cocktail, the old fashioned, and really see how it had evolved over time.
Okay, so it was more a historical perspective.
Correct.
Okay. It's a very fun book, and you set a very sexy scene for the cocktails, and it's almost like the J. Peterson catalog. One very hilarious quote is it a cocktail or is it lingerie?
That's a Soyeau champagne, isn't it?
I don't even remember. I just wrote it down as I was reading the book.
It's an ice cream champagne drink that just blew us away.
Oh, okay. So how many times?
Sometimes the cocktails inspire the writing itself.
Right.
True.
Now, I take my job as a book reviewer very seriously. And as this was my first cocktail book to review, I was compelled to go to my favorite and closest neighborhood bar, which is called Reclamation, on Metropolitan and Bushwick, close by, and asked the very enthusiastic bartenders, whose names that night were Tom and Brendan and Michael, who I know was just off duty sitting on the bar, for some help. And I brought the book and picked out some cocktails to taste. And this was, I wanted a good smattering of types. I had a most delicious first between the sheets. Was that a good place to start?
That's a great place to start. It's got brandy, rum, and champagne. In fact, just today I was talking to a cheesemonger about pairing that drink with some Comté.
Oh, excellent. Unfortunately, I hadn't brought any food with me. And I think the bartender said, oh, this is a rum version of a sidecar. But the bartenders liked it too. And we were sharing because I knew I couldn't drink that many drinks by myself. So they were liberally tasting and even pouring part of my drink into their own glass so we could all taste them. It was quite fun.
That's great.
My next pick, I wanted to taste the Luxardo?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I picked the Colonial Cocktail.
Oh, the Colony
cocktail.
And gin,
also the
cocktail. Gin, Luxardo, grapefruit, I think. What do you think of that one? Was that a good second?
Oh, absolutely. That's like a great brunch drink, I think. Terrific with like mascarpone topped French toast.
You're
really
definitely
refreshing.
See, you are the food person. I can tell.
Oh, Andrea's too, I assure you. Oh.
And then I finished off my little it was only an hour, and it was daylight, thank goodness. I finished it off with a Tipperary.
Oh, nice.
From here to Tipperary.
Yeah.
That's
so the bartender said that's between a Manhattan and a Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Have you heard of a Brooklyn?
We do. I don't know if we have the Brooklyn in the book.
The Brooklyn is not in the book.
Okay.
It's a drink?
I have made it recently.
Oh, okay.
The Tipperary is fun because it uses the Irish whiskey.
Yeah.
It's a drink that, drinks writer Gary Regan wrote about quite a bit. It was just a fun drink that's sort of a blast from the past. You just love the sweet vermouth and love chartreuse with Irish whiskey.
Yes.
Chartreuse and Bushmills that just works.
You just rinse the glass with the chartreuse, correct?
Correct.
Yes. They were impressed with that suggestion. So anyway, I stumbled home after that, but they were all absolutely delicious. But my respect for your endeavor was significantly heightened, because how did you ever do this? I mean, you can't taste that many drinks back to back.
We tasted
them all, Diane, but the key is that we tasted them. And I remember once, and we started this project at Andre's house. One day we made 15 cocktails, but they all went into the fridge with a sticky note. And then whoever was home, you know, could drink it. And we invited friends over to finish them all.
Oh, good. So you just tasted one taste and then put them in the fridge?
Two tastes. Mostly one.
Did your tolerance for alcohol increase as you were working on the book?
I don't know. I think we really started to just be tasting through straws, and certainly by the end of some of our power tastings, we were
not as reliable as
for at least 2 months.
Right. Okay. It's time for a break on the radio station. We'll be right back with Andre Darlington and Tanaya Darlington to discuss the new cocktail hour. Here come my guys.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hi, it's Diane Stemple back with Tanaya and Andre Darlington about their book, The Cocktail Hour. So let's see, who's the book for? Who should buy this book?
Andre?
This book is really for the home, I would say, prosumer. Somebody
okay.
who's really into or starts to get into craft cocktails, or somebody who wants to get into craft cocktails. So many books that were available on the market are by a famous bartender or a famous bar. We really wanted to come at it from the other side, from the, you know, from the really the guest side or the customer side, and mm-hmm. build a book that's really approachable.
Okay. I feel, though, when I was researching cocktails, there's a lot of competition with websites and recipes and recommendations. I'm worried that, you know, books are not as, you know, purchasable as they used to be, because you can look online for so much stuff. Are you worried about that?
There are a lot of resources, which is just fantastic. And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, strangely enough, in the cocktail world, people are really into books still.
Good.
You know, all the certainly even bartenders, you know, are buying the books. And this book, I think it, because it was pitched a little differently, is just doing really fantastic. And people are getting it as gifts, and they're using it at home. Mm-hmm. There's still something about having a book in the kitchen and, you know, getting it messy.
Yeah, that's true. Now, The classic inspirations. What did you want to say something, Tanaya?
Oh, I was just going to say, and in this book also, you know, we thought with the spring release, it's perfect for people who are going to the farmers market and are looking to use fresh ingredients. The nice thing I think about a book with single authors or two authors is you get a certain aesthetic that comes through. And so if you're someone who really wants to get into cocktailing or wants to explore it, rather than dipping around all over the internet where, you know, some of those drink recipes are great and some are really too sweet.
Right.
You get a defined aesthetic, and you know that there's an attention to fresh produce and making mm-hmm. things from scratch. And so I think it delivers a more consistent experience.
Okay, that's a good point. Who are your classic inspirations drink-wise? Were they books? Were they famous bartenders?
Oh, for cocktail recipes?
Yeah. Or for drinking. No, for drinking,
you know,
and then wanting to make.
We're both, oh, we're both writers, so mm-hmm. I think we really dip into a lot of cocktail books.
Mm-hmm.
It's often where you get the best resources. The internet sort of, you know, it's a, you know, like a photocopy of a photocopy. So we ran back to a lot of original source material.
Mm-hmm.
One great inspiration is Kingsley Amis, who wrote a book called Everyday Drinking,
mm-hmm.
which really embodied sort of the fun of the cocktail hour, and that was one
mm-hmm.
That really jumps out. But the original Waldorf Astoria book,
mm-hmm.
Certainly
the Savoy cocktail book,
mm-hmm.
the Savoy cocktail book, David Wondrich's Imbibe. Mm-hmm. We really got into a lot of material that some we knew and some we didn't before the project.
More nostalgic. Dead bartenders.
Yeah, some were nostalgic. We also were really inspired by William Grimes, who has a book called Straight Up or On the Rocks, which really goes into the history, particularly of the martini, and mm-hmm. his writing about cocktails is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, isn't he a Times writer?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What were your first favorite drinks, both of you?
Oh, good question. Probably the old fashioned,
because
really? I used to live in Madison, Wisconsin, and mm-hmm. the old fashioned is the state drink. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Out for on Friday night.
I did not know the old fashioned was the state drink.
A brand old fashioned.
Exactly, with Corbel.
Okay.
For me, it was probably the Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
but it was really, it was really going out to New York in the early 2000s where I started to have some of these amazing drinks that were coming out, or Chicago and the Violet Hour, some of mm-hmm. the early years of the craft cocktail revolution that really turned me on to how culinary cocktails could be, how well balanced they could be, how I guess chefy that it could be.
Right. How did your own taste evolve through the research for the book, or did you pretty much stick with your favorites?
You know,
I think our taste really evolved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. We really found some drinks that we didn't know before
that you loved,
and kind of opened our own horizons. I mean, we wrote the book over, I think, almost 2 years. So
right. It's a lot of drinks. Now, I thought it was an amazing quantity of drinks, like over 200. But then I saw some other books have 500 drinks.
Right. There's an arms race out there. And I think we settled on a nice size that everything could be as accurate as possible and still tell the story. I mean, we could have had more. As science said, we started out with around 500. We really narrowed it down because at a certain point, sort of a law of diminishing returns. Once you get through these, which I think vast majority of the canonical drinks are in this book,
mm-hmm.
plus some other ones that are just kind of personal.
Yeah.
Once you get there, you sort of get the style and you can go on.
Right, And it also seemed like some are just slight variations of other drinks.
Exactly.
So you don't want to be...
of variations, which is once you get into alphabetized cocktail books, it just goes on forever.
Right.
And then you realize that probably in every letter of the alphabet, there's some version of a martini.
Right.
It's not multiple. And it just becomes, weighty to sift through.
Mm-hmm. Now, ingredients. How important are ingredients? How important is the brand or the taste of the booze, and how important are the other parts? Can you address that?
Andre, do you want to talk about this? I mean, I think they're supremely important. We even learned that, you know, like using filtered water and ice, and having fresh ice really makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, ice programs did not come from nowhere.
Right. It is, it's like cheese or food. What makes the difference between a cheese that's really great and one that sends you to the moon, or a meal that just sends you to the moon? There is a point at which if you really pay attention to the details with the drink and really know the ingredients and use high-quality ingredients, that there's just really something magical that happens with a lot of these classic formulas. They've been around for mm-hmm. some of them for hundreds of years for a reason, and done well, you kind of have these aha moments
mm-hmm.
with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm used to cheese where the batch can be important. You know, we'd get meat wheels at Murray's that were phenomenal, and then the next month they wouldn't be phenomenal. Aren't liquors more consistent?
I think they are, but we notice, for example, Diane, if you make a Manhattan and you try, you know, a variety of different bourbons and vermouths, each one is going to taste different, or if you use rye. And one of the first things we did as we started this book was we loaded up our wet bars. We used most of our advance on building ourselves giant wet bars. We did all these tastings together. Like we tasted as many vermouths as we could get our hands on. And we really figured out which spirits worked best in cocktails. So although we didn't align ourselves with any brands or get any free spirits or, or mixers at all, we did include the brand names of the spirits that we used in each recipe, so that if a person at home wants to make a perfectly balanced drink, they can try the combination that we used, which, you know, in our minds was just a great, great combination.
Right. And I would imagine there's some liquor brands that are more mellow and not going to take, you know, the front seat, and you might want that in some cocktails but not in others.
Sure, and there's a great variety in terms of quality, and also, you know, you find some brands use colors or chemicals and things. We really try to get away from, you know, additives and chemical ingredients.
Now, what are the differences in your towns, do you feel, drink-wise, Philadelphia and Madison? What directions do the towns go in? Do the your favorite bars?
That's a good question. What do you think, Andre?
That is a good question. Philadelphia has a lot of classics and a lot of history. You'll see a lot of pre-prohibition drinks there. I would say less of the city difference than the type of bar you go to. You know, if you go to some of the great craft cocktail bars, either in New York or Philadelphia or even Madison, a lot of them are on very similar pages because the bartenders all know each other and they're all going to conferences together. So it's less of a, I mean, I think in general, the East Coast hews towards classics and the West Coast hews towards fresh, although that kind of breakdown is changing.
Okay. So then Madison could be in the middle.
That's right. We go kind of both directions, although there's just because of the type of college town we are, we have a lot of Pacific Northwest influence, a lot of San Francisco influence.
Right. Now, when you say fresh, do you mean the added ingredients, not the liquor?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
You know, on the West Coast, there's just a lot of great ingredients that you can get year-round where you can't in the Midwest or the East Coast.
Right.
Like fresh juices, citrus, things like that.
Well, both give the fresh citrus, but a lot of like produce or interesting, you know, herbs.
So what were your majors in college, the two of you?
Well, I majored in English and creative writing.
Okay, that's not surprising.
And I was a philosophy major.
That's perfect for drinking. The bartender who was sort of making fun of me while he was making my drinks was a philosophy and comp lit major.
So, oh, funny.
So that sort of includes both of you.
Yeah, I find a lot of writers and philosophers behind bars.
Yeah. Well, that's because there are no jobs in writing and philosophy.
I don't know. I beg to differ.
Oh, you have a real job.
I'm an English professor.
Right. So what do your students think of your new book?
Well, I'm slowly easing them away from flavored vodkas and towards gin.
Oh, thank goodness.
I know.
Now, so,
I really see it as a service.
Now that, yes, definitely. Now that is, I have shied away from flavored vodkas just because I'm ornery. And I didn't notice, there are none in the book. Is that true?
This is true.
It's true. We really believe that if you want a flavor vodka, it's so easy to do on your own with fresh ingredients.
Right, right. Or the flavor can be a fresh juice put into the drink.
Yeah, there are a couple of companies that are doing great work. Hangar One, you know, does a wonderful raspberry and a few other flavors where they're actually using fruit that they're macerating. But, you know, a lot of the flavored stuff is, you know, chemical-based flavor additives or, you know, even sort of essential oils. And so, you know, it's all over the board. So not all flavored vodka is that.
Okay. Now, these days, what are the pressures on bartenders out there with all the concocted cocktails and classics? I mean, kind of both going on at once. Does a bar have to have its own special cocktails?
Good question. It really depends. I think the pressure is just the stakes are higher for remembering more drinks. I mean, these are all things that are really great for consumers, that bars are, you know, really have to be using fresh ingredients or people can tell. I feel like the bar for quality has really gone up in the last decade. And I think it's that, you know, it's really, we're really in the second golden age of American cocktails, having discovered our American heritage with these drinks that in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, sort of turned into Kool-Aid, and now they're back, rediscovering these wonderful recipes.
It's kind of like what's happened with cheese, industrial age, people got used to eating industrial cheeses, and just like the cocktail world, people got used to mixers and grenadine made with, you know, red number five and things like that. That's not how things used to be.
Right. Do you feel the trends have gone too far? Is it too silly? Is it, you know, is the pressure pushing people into crazy land?
I think there's always a danger of that with the fast followers, you know, but the principles of the thing are what's important, and the vast majority of good bars, you know, craft cocktail bars, are still following, you know, principles that are just the same for food or cheese. Principles of quality. I think we entered a moment there where, you know, unfortunately craft cocktails were tied to handlebar mustaches and aprons, which was a little, you know, sort of an aesthetic distraction.
Right.
And I think actually a lot of bars, in the last 5 years have really stepped away from that to realize that, hey, we don't need to be fussy in that way about these drinks. We should really mainstream this.
Right. And make the drinks the best they can be made, not with 100 ingredients, but with maybe 4 or 5.
That's right. You want some of the best drinks. You know, people always ask, how do you know, what do you order to when you go into a bar to find out whether they make a great drink or not? And a Manhattan is a great one. Just the basic ingredients. You're going to learn all there is to know about how good the bar is. Manhattan, or a lot of people think Daiquiri, or another just 3-ingredients drink.
Okay, so that's good advice.
It's kind of like Bach, you know, there's nowhere to hide.
Okay, well, on that note, I think I'm going to read one of your first line in the book that I absolutely loved. And the first line of the book is, "We're not bartenders, we're lushes." Was there any dispute?
We spent a long time on that first line, Diane.
Was there any dispute over that line?
It's kind of over the top, but, you know, in a tongue-in-cheek way, we wanted to be really clear that, hey, we don't work in the industry. We don't want to misrepresent ourselves, but we really do love drinks.
We
love food, but we love drinking, too.
Well,
so we come at it with passion and a sense of exploration.
Well, how can you not want to keep reading after that line? And your great attitude just jumps off the page in the whole book.
Thank you.
And lushes seems like an old-fashioned word to me. I feel like my mother used that word.
Well, let's resurrect it.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a delightful book. The name of the book is The New Cocktail Hour by Andre Darlington and Tania Darlington, brother and sister, joining me from Philadelphia and Wisconsin, Madison. And it's been great to talk to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Great.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.